Thought Leadership Studio.
You're listening to Thought Leadership Studio, the podcast that helps you master high-level positive mass influence to create distinctive business niches, captivate an audience, grow your following, and change the game by changing the frame with strategic thought leadership.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Welcome back to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, and this is episode 75, Unlocking Creative Team Dynamics Through Art with Karen D. Groves. Transforming corporate culture, harnessing creativity and silent collaboration to foster innovation and change with the founder of Canvas Creek Team Building. What this episode will do for you is help you understand team dynamics through art by discovering how Karen integrates artistic approaches to enhance team collaboration and communication. Gain insights into creative leadership by learning about Karen's innovative leadership techniques that leverage creativity to inspire and motivate teams. Art as a tool for problem solving. Explore how artistic methods can be applied to solve complex problems within teams and organizations. Learn how to build a better culture of trust by gaining insights on how to foster a trusting and open environment in the workplace using creative strategies. Enhance team performance through creativity by understanding the impact of creativity on team performance and how to implement it effectively in your organization. And empowering teams with artistic techniques by learning practical artistic techniques that can be used to empower and engage team members, leading to higher productivity and satisfaction. But before we dive more deeply into this episode, in case you're new here, consider that I created the Thought Leadership Studio podcast to help listeners improve their thought leadership skills. So whether or not you consider yourself a thought leader at this point, consider that I've come to the conclusion that the practice of strategic thought leadership is now fundamental to effective marketing and helpful in any area of positive influence. It's about leading an audience to embrace a unique perspective that gives them more value. So this podcast is designed to provide an accelerated training process. And an important part of this is having models of excellence, for which I provide interviews of people who excel in one or more areas relevant to strategic thought leadership. And if you're listening on an app, make sure you visit the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com. It's linked in the episode description for a summary of the episode with a curated transcript, a story and images, and additional resources and offers. In this episode of Thought Leadership Studio, I'm excited to introduce Karen D. Groves. Karen, known as the Monday Videos Lady, is a change agent and catalyst for change. She helps people embrace change and drive it themselves. She believes change is important for success and society needs to be more open and authentic. Karen's work involves team building through collaborative art projects where teams create art together in silence. This process allows teams to observe how they interact and collaborate and helps them make decisions and solve problems. Karen also emphasizes the importance of creativity and suggests that people try new things and spend time in quiet reflection to enhance their creativity. She can be reached through her website, Canvas Creek Teams, and offers a book called Quiet Leadership, among many others. And Quiet Leadership explores the lessons she's learned about leadership. So without further ado, let's jump right into the interview.
Thought Leadership Studio.
So I'm your host of Thought Leadership Studio, Chris McNeil, and I'm sitting here across Zoom with Karen Groves, who is known as the Monday Videos Lady for her energetic Welcome to the Week. Karen is a five-time author, both an award-winning and TEDx speaker, founder of Canvas Creek Team Building, and recipient of the Montana Governor's Award for Volunteerism. Her mission is to inspire others to be their best, to try the next thing, and to know they are worthy every effort it takes to live their next. Welcome, Karen.
Oh my gosh, I'm excited to talk to you, Chris. Thank you.
So I also see that you're described as a dynamo and catalyst for change. So you're a change agent.
Oh my gosh. I love to help people do new things, sit in a new seat, try new toothpaste, change their business model. Yes, I'm all about change.
So have you always been like that, or did you become that way?
That is a great question. So many years ago, I was in the car business, which is where I learned so much about the world. And a trainer came in and asked us about change. And I said, oh, I'm great at change. And the whole team, which was all men, I was the only woman, all of them said, you are not. And I was so shocked. And that's when I realized that I was good with change if I was the one instigating it. And I find that's true with almost everybody, right? We like change as long as we get to be in charge of it. So I do love change. I really have leaned into that, and I help teams lean into change, but I do like to drive it. I don't like to have other people drive it.
So is that a wake-up call, a pivotal moment for you that set you off on this path?
Yeah, that absolutely was a pivotal moment of discovering more about myself and finding out. Before that, I didn't really understand this whole world of training and motivation that was out there. So it really was this good introduction to that. And I decided I wanted to be a happier person and I wanted to embrace change.
Wow. And what has that done for you?
Well, watch the Monday videos.
I'll link to that for the listener as well. So that'll be in the episode description.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. Yeah. So I decided, we lived in Alaska and I went through the very depressed, we've been in Alaska too long and it's dark outside, and went through all of that and decided I didn't want to be that. And I've had some things happen in my life that I could have gone down a victim path, but instead I chose to be happy. And so every day I wake up, my feet hit the floor, we head out the door. It is all about happiness. And my Monday videos are, they start with Happy Monday, and there's some jumping.
Nice.
Right. Just trying to get people to embrace that idea that you get to choose how you show up in the world. And now I can't show up without a smile and without energy. And I do so much for a person my age. I get to do a lot because that's what I decided to do.
That's awesome. You know, I heard Wayne Dyer, it really impacted me. I heard him say a long time ago that happiness is not about getting it from life. It's what you bring and give to life.
Oh my gosh.
That impacted me deeply. And I thought about that. You know, it's a decision, isn't it?
Yeah. And so how did you find yourself changing when you realized that?
I found myself, well, that's part of a long-term continuum. And I was an athlete who got addicted to sports psychology and all the motivational tricks you could use, and then got into neuro-linguistic programming and all the motivational things you can do for yourself and to empower others. And I've always just, gosh, since I was like 19 years old, so I hardly remember my life before then. You know, it's always been about helping others find their best self, maybe when they don't even see it for themselves. I own fitness training studios for over a decade, sold them in 2008. And that was part of that, you know? So, and I really like too, how you weave it into bringing out team dynamics, like we were talking about before we started recording, you know, and that's the fascination to me, because that's, I think, an extension of finding your best self, helping others find their best selves, because you have a whole other entity when more than one person are working together to achieve a goal. And that's intriguing to me. What things do you think would be of interest to our listeners that you've learned from working with team dynamics that way?
Yeah, that again is a great question. Thank you. So with my process, our teams are creating art together. Four people stand side by side at a blank canvas with no instruction, and they have to figure out what they're going to create. And here's what we do, Chris. I don't always tell this secret, but what we do is make them work in silence.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so imagine trying to complete a project that you feel so uncertain about and a little bit angry that you even have to be in team building, because nobody wants to go to a team building event. And now you have to create this art together. And so what happens is that one person is assigned to start the painting, and then pretty soon everybody joins in and they work, like, you will work here, I'll work here, Susie will work here, Sam works over here. And after a while, with some of the process that we introduce, the team starts moving around and they paint on one another's work. And at that point, we get to see how the team interacts together, who the leaders are, who's being pushed out, who's being inclusive, without anybody ever having to tell us anything. They don't say a word. We just see it displayed on that canvas. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the process, the team is always amazingly committed to that art, no matter how ugly it is. Sometimes it's not very pretty, but they're committed to that art and they're committed to one another. They might not have even known one another before, because they created that together. They have this incredible connection. And so what I've learned watching people, and I think this is what you'll appreciate, is that if we take away the noise, but if we introduce a level playing field, that we can do amazing things together. We can create incredible outcomes, but sometimes we just have to shut off the noise and listen to one another in a whole new way.
I'm picking up a couple of really interesting threads off of this. I'd like to follow, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And one of them is the whole nonverbal aspect of having to communicate nonverbally.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine that's a wake-up call for people who are used to doing it all with language.
Especially the bossy ones.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, and another is when you participate in creating a piece of work. I think this really applies to, I know we have consultants that listen and they do collaborative projects with clients like I do in my day job. And if everybody doesn't participate in that, it's not the same. People have to be able to point to it and say, oh, I did this part. But I can imagine you found some really interesting things about what happens when you bring people like this, because you're doing it in a corporate environment generally, is that correct?
Yeah, it's almost always a corporate environment. We specialize in retreats, so people are already a little outside their comfort zone.
Sure.
And when they walk in the room, we have tarps on the floor and plastic on the walls and all these blank canvases. And so the team is already a little unsettled, right?
Uh-huh.
And then you take away their words, and the person who doesn't want to participate, there's always one in a group who just will not play, but they stand back and they stir paint. They'll put some green on the plate and they'll put some blue on the plate and they'll stir and stir and stir it. And they just stand outside of the group, not getting touched, not joining in the canvas. And eventually they will walk up and they will have created the craziest blue or gray you've ever seen. And they'll just make one little line on the canvas. And to them, it was the greatest contribution ever. And the team will respond to that one little contribution with great welcoming. And you can feel the electricity in the room. That's when the team will bond, when that one person finally says, here's my contribution. And I think that's the way it works all of the time. If you've got somebody who's non-participatory in a team event, you're trying to launch a new product or whatever, if you've got a non-participatory one, when they finally speak up, the group generally listens and the group will come together and coalesce around, okay, now we're in this together, which is so important.
That's interesting. That really speaks to system dynamics, for one thing. And have you come up with categories of types of interaction from people that play out in both what they're coming to the event with and what they leave with, having evolved from that? Like this person.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
I was just going to give an example. So carry on, please.
Yes, we have. We work with whoever the leader is and ask them what they want the outcome to be. And do they want the outcome to be communication? Do they want it to be change? Do they want it to be collaboration? And then we really influence that with the music that we play during the process and the tools that we give the team to work with. And so from that, we have it timed down to the minute how a team should be behaving, when somebody should have been inclusive, when somebody should have taken a knee, when somebody should have been really pissed off. Pardon me, but somebody has to get there.
Sure.
Right. And so, yes, we absolutely can categorize who moves into that space and who never moves out of the space that they normally stay in. Like if they're the shy person and they will not get out of that shyness, that's a whole category, right? And so we watch that process. And then at the end, we get to talk about that as a team. But what's really cool is that the team is in, we call it rarefied air, that people are more honest and they're more creative in the moments after they paint. And they'll say, gosh, Chris, you always are a little bit bossy. And today you couldn't do that. And I felt like you listened to me today. And so people will get to have growth moments.
Oh, I can only imagine. And is part of that helping us get out of how our society is so, for lack of a better term, left-brained and logical, as opposed to accessing our creativity, quote, right brain. I know you can't really divide it that way physiologically, but it's a shorthand for the logical thinking versus the creative thinking. Mm-hmm. And how valuable do you consider this creative thinking in the business world?
Oh my gosh, it's so paramount to success now. I think we're in this whole phase of our society that we'll look back and say that was the creative period where people created completely differently. They created things out of nothing. And so I think creativity is incredibly important. And what happens when we do our process the pure way, there's lots of ways we can mess with it. If it's completely pure and you stay silent through the whole process, teams do come out of it and make dramatic changes. We've had several companies who completely changed their business model in the hour and a half after they paint, just because they were so creative and so fearless. I think that's the other thing that painting does, is you're a little scared of it. And then when you conquer it, the team becomes fearless. And they're like, oh yeah, we can make a change in our processes. We can make a change in our product. We need to stop being scared.
That's huge. I mean, just think about the businesses that were scared of making change, the Blockbusters of the world. Where are they now?
Right?
You know?
Right? Yeah. And we know if you don't change, you die.
That's right. Because the world sure is going to change around us. And if we don't either change in response to it, or perhaps like yourself, become an agent of change, an initiator.
Right.
Let's bring that about.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard one time that when we introduce change into an organization, they look at it as a virus and everybody attacks it. And they're like, how can we stop this change? And so you have to do something that becomes, you know, just take it outside of the organization to make change happen. Well, that's not always effective, right? So if they're going to kill the virus, we have to find a different way to introduce that virus. So they're like, oh, it's an antigen. It's going to be really good. We want to have this in our system.
Well, I think it was it Virginia Satir, the famous family therapist that kind of created that whole field, who said the greatest human motivation is the familiar.
Isn't that true?
So getting people to step out of the familiar, you know a little bit about that.
Yes, right?
Now you've
right. And when you step out of the familiar, it's so empowering.
Oh, absolutely. Now you're an author as well, right?
Yeah.
We were talking a little bit about your book, Quiet Leadership, that you wrote during the pandemic. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that and the background behind it and its intentions?
Yeah. Again, thank you for that question. So the pandemic started, and probably like many of your listeners, my business just, you know, all died at one time on the 12th of May, 12th of March, every single event on my calendar canceled. And I'm like, ooh, right. What's going to happen now? Right. And so I sat on the couch with Netflix and ice cream and thought, oh, that's not going to be my story. By damn, we're going to do something else. And I watched what we were doing and how we were treating one another. And I turned to my husband one day and said, we need some quiet leadership right now. And he said, oh my gosh, Karen, there's nobody better than you to teach the world about quiet leadership, because our experiences are so quiet, right? That's, we're showing people a different style of leadership. So with quiet leadership, I took all of the lessons that I had learned in life, the lessons my dad taught me, who was a logger with a third grade education, but changed my entire thinking about coaching people. Just all kinds of people took their lessons and put them into short chapters. They're 3 to 5 minute reads about what if we looked at the world like grandma looked at the world or Dave looked at the world and behaved in this way. So it's an interesting look at leadership, and it empowers people to trust themselves that they know how to lead, that they have the lessons in their hearts, in their life, that they can just turn into those and lead.
I love that. So it's impacting more on level of believing in yourself that you have this, that you can do this, as opposed to, oh, it's just a set of skills you need to memorize. But it's way more than that, isn't it?
It is so much more. And I think when we look at leadership and say, oh my gosh, that person taught me so much about leadership, and they totally were not a leader. One of the stories I tell in the book is a little lady who sat on a horse with an Indian headdress on and a chihuahua on her lap, and she was a photo op. And one day my mom picked her up as she was hitchhiking, and my mom picked her up and took her to the next town. And this gal's name was Mary Two Eagles. And Mary leaned over the back seat and she said, you kids want to learn how to hitchhike? And we're like, our mom's like, no. And Mary said, well, here's the deal. You have to put your pack on your back, and you have to put your left thumb out, and you have to head where you're going, and somebody will stop and pick you up. But if you put your right thumb out and you stop and you just look at the cars, nobody's ever going to pick you up. And so, Chris, I turned that into a quiet leadership story. And if you put your thumb out and say, this is where I'm going, this is what I want to do, that your people will pick you up and they will take you there. But you have to be moving that direction in order to get it to happen.
That's a great metaphorical story.
Isn't it? Yeah, it's so fun. I love telling that one from stage. And I love then the power of sitting with a team and saying, so what is your next? What do you want to do here? And who can help us? How are we going to get out of this space that we're in, where we're afraid of change, or we're afraid to say what's really going on? How are we going to get out of that and really change? And how are we going to stick our thumb out?
And how are we going to stick our thumb out? If you could redesign society, to change it any way you wanted, and it took no effort, how would things be different?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think even though I'm all about happiness and all of those kind of motivations, I think that we would be more considerate and more open to, it takes a little bit of everybody, right? It takes me with my silly happiness, and it takes the pragmatic person, and it takes the grumpy person to make society really work. And when we recognize that we all have to have our roles, I think we would be much stronger. And it would be, and then each one of us can stick our thumb out and say, I really am the grumpy person, because if I wasn't grumpy, you would just walk right off the cliff, right? I have to be watching for the errors that you're going to make. And so that would be my goal, that we figure out how to collaborate with one another by truly accepting one another.
So openness, is that a guiding principle?
Yes, absolutely. And authenticity. You have to be authentic.
So openness and authenticity. And how does that play out when you're doing this group work? How do you guide people to get the most out of it? You say you do some debriefing kind of processing after the exercise. How does that play out? Or do you have any specific examples you could share?
Yeah. So I think that you can help people to be more open when you take them out of their normal environment. So if we were just going to have a board meeting, I would not let you sit in the seat you always sit in. You have to move. You have to change chairs, right? So you think different thoughts.
Sure.
And so the reason the collaborative art works is that you don't do that on a daily basis. Probably your team will only ever do it one time. And we take you completely out of the setting that you're comfortable with, and then ask you the questions that you've been thinking about, but we ask them in a new way, an outsider's way. And give you the opportunity to think about it with a more creative expression. So when we're doing the collaborative art, we use four senses. There's sound, silence or music. There's the touch of the brush on the canvas, but also you're touching one another because you're so close together. There's smell, the smell of the canvas, the smells we use in the room, the smell of your neighbor's feet, because we usually paint barefooted. And then sight, just seeing things differently. Very seldom do we get all of those things involved in a business meeting, right? When you're brainstorming, you don't think about all those things. But if you do, if you introduce that into a board meeting or into a brainstorming session where people are writing notes in crayons and markers, you're going to get different thoughts. It's that doing the same old thing in the same old way that gets you the same old thing.
Yeah, I love that. And it's like, if you can use all of your senses in the creative process. Mm-hmm. And I remember studying, I read a book, it's called Strategies of Genius. It's really interesting, actually a series of books, where researchers studied great geniuses of history, like Tesla, Mozart, mm-hmm. Einstein, and from reading, you know, the letters he'd written, and interviews that happened during their life, he deciphered their own unique strategies of accessing that. And being able to tap into multiple senses was a very common characteristic of people who are creative geniuses. Mm-hmm. I remember specifically the one about Mozart's. I tried it in my own music and it made a big difference. And that he could write a whole symphony and hold it in his head before he wrote the first note down. It's like, how did he do that? And apparently the way he did that was he would first walk along in a happy state of mind, because the state of consciousness obviously impacts our creative output. If we're in a positive state, things are going to flow. And musical ideas, he would like hum them to himself. So he turned a kinesthetic feeling into musical thought. Then he would go to the next stage and take each little melodic snippet and imagine it like taste in a meal.
Oh my gosh.
Cross mapping. And when you think of Mozart's music, one of the first words that comes to mind is tasteful. So it's literally, he's using the sense of taste to compose. And mm-hmm. after he'd arranged a good meal out of it, which brings in the balance between the instruments and the interplay at a different level than other senses, he would turn the whole thing into this visual gestalt, like this huge sculpture. So he could see, he said he could see the whole symphony as a whole all at once.
Oh my gosh.
So I was like, you know, transferring things and involving all the senses just unlocks so much more potential, because I mean, each sense is kind of good for different things. A visual is kind of like taking in a lot of information at once. And then the taste is like balancing different things so that they're perfectly balanced with each other. And you can pick up, of course, the emotional state, bring something new to it. But how do you help people access those kinds of things? What kind of cues do you give to those who are participating before or after, do you think could apply to the creative process of someone listening to this podcast?
Yeah, again, that's a great question. I'm currently in Red Lodge, Montana at the Red Lodge Music Festival. And it's filled. There's hundreds of kids here being absolutely immersed in music this week. They start playing at 9 o'clock in the morning, they're done at 4 p.m, but they're playing and then they're outside for a while. And then they come back in the evening for a concert. And they have 8 days of this. And so they're absolutely immersed in a musical world outside of their normal environment. And to watch those kids come out of this is incredible. And so I tell you that because I think sometimes we have to slow down our normal routine and immerse ourselves into exactly what you described as Mozart. We're just going to immerse ourselves into the taste and into the sound and into the sculpting of this. And think about nothing but that for just a moment. When we're thinking about traffic and we're thinking about, you know, just all of the things that are going on in the world, it's so hard to be creative. Our brain is just fuzzy. Mm-hmm. But when we stop for a moment, we say, I'm just going to look at the color green. I'm just going to see what I could do with the color green. I'm just going to hang out quietly with no music and no podcast, and no audiobook. I'm just going to be here and listen to myself for a moment. That's when we hook into our creativity.
Getting people to stop that, I guess, that train of activity and habitual thinking, to take a pause, And you know, it's kind of counterintuitive to many in the business world that you have to be serious and you have to get things done. But that's not when the insight comes, it can change the game.
Yeah, I think that the insights come when you're in the shower, right? Because everything else is turned off except for the shower. The other thing that I suggest people do besides just picking a color and getting absorbed in that for a day is to go for a really long drive with no music, no people, just get in the car and drive and listen to the tires. And I had somebody who was making big life decisions one day and she called me and she said, I'm 400 miles from home. Can I turn around? And I said, have you solved your problems? Have you figured out yet? And she said, yeah, I have. I know what I want to do and what I want to be now. And she's living that life, but she had to turn everything off, right? And get absorbed in something completely new. So I really feel that when we jump into that collaborative art process, that's what we're doing. We're shutting off everything else. Cell phones are put away. Nobody's bothering the team. There's silence. And they just get to say, this is who I am and what I am for the next 60 minutes. And then your brain can solve those big problems, which is what the shower does for you. It gives you 5 minutes where you just get to shut it off.
Sure. Now, over time, have you seen a difference in people's attention spans? Is the internet training us to shorten our attention spans by these little video clips and this endless scrolling you can do from video to video and never really center on one thing for very long?
Okay, I think you're going to love this, and I'll find the link and send it to you. But I recently read an article because I was worried about that as we work with kids. I thought, oh gosh, we got to move fast working in these schools. And I started researching it, and Netflix actually argues that that was a flawed study that said our memories are getting shorter. And their argument is how long people will binge watch a show, how long people will just scroll. They're not bored in the scrolling, and they're not scrolling because they're looking for the next thing. It's because they are completely invested and their attention is 100% there. And so Netflix would argue that we have a longer attention span than ever before. Kids who are playing these games are like, oh, you shouldn't be playing the games. So like, no. It's teaching them to remember characters and remember spaces and remember how they got there. So we actually have a longer attention span. So for the last few months, I've been playing with that and just really watching people and saying, do we have a longer attention span? And I think we do if we look at it from a different way. It does have to be entertaining. People don't just want to sit and be bored. We're no longer good at that. But if it's interesting, people will stay invested much longer.
Interesting. I'd love to see that. And of course, we know Netflix is definitely smarter than Blockbuster. I just saw a story that in the early days of Netflix, when they are just getting by, I think the dot-com bubble had just crashed and they're looking for money. They tried to sell their business to Blockbuster for like $50 million, which is nothing.
Oh my gosh.
In a business. And Blockbuster's, we got it all together. We're going to continue on. And of course, 10 years later, Netflix is worth billions and billions and Blockbuster is gone. So talk about the need for people like you to go out there and help people in business be open and be creative and to access that part of themselves that can come up with the innovative idea that might be the next Netflix or might just solve a problem that they've been facing day to day in their business.
Yeah, it's really cool when a team is in the middle of the process and there's a moment where my team just knows to watch what's happening on their faces. And people will be painting away and they'll be concentrating and they've stopped harassing one another. They've gotten back into a zone where they're on their own and people will be working away and all of a sudden they'll look up and they'll stop and they'll smile. And I know they've made a decision.
Really?
And it's so fascinating. And again, you feel the electricity hit the room. And sometimes people will even weep because they've made such a big decision and they come out of the process and they can hardly wait to talk about it. Sometimes, we don't put this on the website, but sometimes it's, I have to leave this job because I'm not good for this role anymore. And we love it when that's the problem person. They're like, we don't like her anymore. We don't know what to do. And they decide to leave. So that's good because they go find their next best thing. When a person looks up and they smile and they have solved a problem, they come out of the process and they're like, I've got it, you guys. And everybody just puts their heads together and they start scribbling with paintbrushes on tables and they'll solve their problem. And it's so powerful to see that decision be made.
Wow, that's fascinating. Well, I love the work you do. I think it's awesome. And we usually close out these interviews with a couple of things. And the first one, two categories of questions. The first one is, knowing our audience is generally entrepreneurs, thought leaders of various sorts, people in marketing, some kind of influence, PR, what would be the top three things you would recommend they do, perhaps to enhance their creativity or to access parts themselves that could be helpful, that can only really come from you, that they could do right away to make a difference? And the second question is, if someone's listening to this saying, we need to get Karen here to get our team working on SMART together because we want to get this group dynamic going or help unleash creativity, whoever, how would they reach you would be the best way?
Great. Okay. Good questions. I'm going to start with the second one because that's easy. Go to canvascreekteams.com and check on that. And especially look at what we're doing in schools. We are changing school environments. My team is amazing at that. So canvascreekteams.com or email me, KarenD as in dog, 144 at Gmail. Very fancy. And if they email me and tell me they were on your show, I'll send them a copy of the book.
Awesome.
So, Chris, I think there are two things that I would, maybe three, there are two things I really would like people to do to just get into creativity. And that is try something they've never done before. If you've never painted before, go spend $20 on paints and just sit down and just paint. If you've never played a harp before, go play a harp. We just visited the Musical Instrument Museum in Phoenix, played harps, played banjos. When you do something that is completely outside of your comfort zone, that's when you get creative. So go do something that you're like, that scares the crap out of me. I just did stand-up, a stand-up routine. And when they picked me, I was so scared. But it boosted my creativity. So do something you're scared of. Go do that. Other thing would be to go sit under a tree, go sit by a waterfall. Go for a long drive and turn everything off and just listen to you, because you know what you need. You know how to solve the problem. You know you're just not listening most of the time. And so do something super creative, super outside of your comfort zone, but then also just go be quiet. I think if you can go be quiet for an afternoon, it'll change your whole world.
That's awesome. I can certainly attest to that. So the second one for sure, because it's the morning walks with my dog in various parks around here. Mm-hmm. And we're in synchronicity mm-hmm. now. You said you had a music festival going on there. We have Spoleto going on in Charleston right now. It's an international festival of music and art that comes here every year. It's really a lot of fun. And my wife and I are going to try to see some chamber music this week, which will be a little bit out of my rock and roll comfort zone.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, and Chris, I bet when you go for a walk in the morning, you don't have earpods in, do you? Your AirPods in?
I do part of the time, but what I do is not to listen to something necessarily, but to transcribe a bunch of ideas I have for a book I'm working on for a client project, because that's when the ideas come and I want to catch them. So I have an app that I record those on.
Great. Okay. So I'm in on that. But when I'm out hiking, and I hike every morning, and people are just, they're listening to things. I'm like, oh, stop. You're doing it wrong. You think you're using your time well, and you're not. Take them out. But that's
I get that 100%. Especially if you're in bear country and you don't hear a bear coming up. Here, we just have the alligators. And as long as you don't walk in the water, you're generally okay. So we're good on that part.
Right. Oh gosh, the little cabin I'm in this. Right, you gotta watch. The little cabin I'm in this week has a bear in the backyard, so we're being very aware.
Yes, bear aware keeps you safe. Well, it's been a pleasure, Karen.
Thank you.
I enjoyed it.
Good. It was such a treat to talk to you. I appreciate and admire the work you do. Keep it up.
I appreciate you too. Thank you.
Thought Leadership Studio. Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, and this has been episode 75, Unlocking Creative Team Dynamics Through Art with Karen D. Gross, where we discussed subjects such as the power of being the change instigator, silent collaboration revealing true team dynamics, growth moments from honest feedback in team building, unlocking creative potential in business, and introducing change as an antigen rather than a virus. So, if you are listening on an app, make sure you click the link in the episode description, which will take you to the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com, where I've linked to a lot of Karen's resources, the Canvas team's website, the YouTube channel we discussed, her LinkedIn, and her books on Amazon. And also there you can get the free Marketer's Guide to Strategic Thought Leadership, a guide to organizing the building blocks of your own thought leadership effectively. Thanks again for listening to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm Chris McNeil, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.
Thought Leadership Studio.